Alright, we're starting chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. This is called Snape's Grudge. No one in Gryffindor Tower slept that night. They knew that the castle was being searched again, and the whole house stayed awake in the common room, waiting to hear whether Black had been caught. Professor McGonagall came back at dawn to tell them that he had escaped. Throughout the day, everywhere they went, they saw signs of tighter security. Professor Flitwick could be seen teaching the front doors to recognize a large picture of Sirius Black. Yeah, why didn't they do that before?
I don't know.
Filch was suddenly bustling up and down the corridors, boarding up everything from tiny cracks in the walls to mouse holes. Sir Cadogan had been fired. His portrait had been taken back to its lonely landing on the 7th floor, and the fat lady was back. She'd been expertly restored, but was still extremely nervous, and had agreed to return to her job only on condition that she was given extra protection. A bunch of surly security trolls had been hired to guard her. They paced the corridor of the menacing group, talking in grunts and comparing the size of their clubs. Harry couldn't help but noticing that the statue of the One-Eyed Witch on the 3rd floor remained unguarded and unblocked. It seemed that Fred and George had been right in thinking that they, and now Harry, Ron, and Hermione, were the only ones who knew about the hidden passageway. "Do you reckon we should tell someone?" Harry asked Ron. "We know he's not coming in through Honeydukes," said Ron dismissively. "We'd have heard if the shop had been broken into." Harry was glad Ron took this view. If the One-Eyed Witch was boarded up too, he'd never be able to go into Hogsmeade again. Ron had become an instant celebrity. For the first time in his life, people were paying more attention to him than Harry, and it was clear that Ron was rather enjoying the experience. Though still severely shaken by the night's events, he was happy to tell anyone who had asked what happened with a wealth of detail. "I was asleep, and I heard this ripping noise. I thought I was in my dream, you know, but then there was this draft. I woke up, and one side of the hangings in my bed had been pulled down. I rolled over, and I saw him standing over me, like a skeleton with loads of filthy hair, holding this great long knife. It must have been 12 inches. He looked at me, and I looked at him, and then I yelled, and he scampered." Why, though? Ron added to Harry, as the group of second-year girls had been listening to the chilling tale departed. "Why did he run?" Harry had been wondering the same thing. Why had Black, having gotten the wrong bed, not silenced Ron and proceeded to Harry? Black had proved 12 years ago that he didn't mind murdering innocent people, and this time he had been facing 5 unarmed boys, 4 of whom were asleep. "He must have known he'd have quite a job getting back out of the castle once you'd yelled and woken people up," said Harry thoughtfully. "He'd have had to kill the whole house before he got through that portrait hole. Then he would have met the teachers." Neville was in total disgrace. Professor McGonagall was so furious with him that she had banned him from all future Hogsmeade visits, given him detention, and forbidden anyone to give him a password into the tower. Poor Neville was forced to wait outside the common room every night for someone to let him in, while security trolls leered unpleasantly at him. None of these punishments, however, came close to matching the one his grandmother had in store for him. 2 days after Black's break-in, she sent Neville the very worst thing a Hogwarts student could receive over breakfast.
A howler.
A howler. The school owls swooped into the great hall carrying the mail as usual, and Neville choked as a huge barn owl landed in front of him, a scarlet envelope clutched in its beak. Harry and Ron, who were sitting opposite him, recognized the letter as a howler at once. Ron had gotten one from his mother the year before. "Run for it, Neville," Ron advised. Neville didn't need telling twice. He seized the envelope and, holding it before him like a bomb, sprinted out of the hall while the Slytherin table exploded with laughter at the sight of him. They heard the howler go off in the entrance hall. Neville's grandmother, magically magnified to 100 times its usual volume, shrieked about how he had brought shame on the whole family. Harry was busy feeling sorry for Neville, too busy to notice that immediately that he had a letter too. Hedwig got his attention by nipping him sharply on the wrist. Ouch. Thanks, Hedwig. Harry tore open the envelope while Hedwig had helped himself to Neville's cornflakes. The note inside said, Dear Harry and Ron, how about having a tea with me this afternoon, round 6? I'll come and collect you from the castle. Wait for me in the entrance hall. You're not allowed out on your own. Cheers.
Hagrid.
He probably wants to hear all about Black, said Ron. So at 6 o'clock that afternoon, Harry and Ron left Gryffindor Tower, passed the security trolls at a run, and headed down to the entrance hall. Hagrid was already waiting for them. All right, Hagrid, said Ron. Suppose you want to hear about Saturday night, do you? I've already heard about it, said Hagrid, opening the front doors and leading them outside. Oh, said Ron, looking slightly put out. The first thing they saw upon entering Hagrid's cabin was Buckbeak, who was stretched out on the top of Hagrid's patchwork quilt, his enormous wings folded tight to his body, enjoying a large plate of dead...
Rat?
Ferrets. Averting his... Do you like this?
No.
Oh, okay. Averting his... Really? Averting his eyes from this unpleasant sight, Harry saw a gigantic, hairy brown suit and a very horrible orange and yellow tie hanging from the top of Hagrid's wardrobe door. What are they for, Hagrid? Said Harry. Buckbeak's case against the Committee for Disposal of Magic Creatures, said Hagrid. This Friday, him and me be going down to London together. I've booked 2 beds on the night bus. Harry felt a nasty pang of guilt. He had completely forgotten that Buckbeak's trial was so near. Judging by the uneasy look on Ron's face, he had too. They had also forgotten their promise about helping him prepare Buckbeak's defense. The arrival of the Firebolt had driven it clean out of their minds. Hagrid poured them tea and offered them a plate of bath buns, but they knew better to accept than to accept. They had too much experience with Hagrid's cooking. I got something to discuss with you two, said Hagrid, sitting between himself between them and looking uncharacteristically serious. What? Said Harry. Hermione, said Hagrid. What about her? Said Ron. She's in a right state, that's what. She'd been coming down to visit me a lot since Christmas. I'm feeling lonely. First years weren't talking to her because of the firebolts. Now you're not talking to her because of the car, but because her cat. Eight scabbers, Ron interjected angrily. Because her cat acted like all cats do, Hagrid continued doggedly. She's cried a fair few times, you know, going through a rough time at the moment. Bitten off more than she can chew, if you ask me. All the work she tried to do. I mean, I can't read Hagrid.
All the work she tried to do.
Like that? You think I'm going to do that?
Yeah. He's Scottish.
He's Scottish. Still found time to nobody's like, he says to her.
Mm-hmm.
To help me. The Buckbeak's case. Mind. She's found some really good stuff for me. Reckon he'll stand a good chance now. Chance. I can't.
You did it right.
Okay. Hagrid, we should have helped as well. Sorry. Harry began awkwardly. I'm not blaming you, said Hagrid, waving Harry's apology aside. God knows you've had enough to be getting on with. I've seen you practicing Quidditch every hour of the night. But I gotta tell you, I thought you two value a friend more than broomsticks or rats, that's all. Harry and Ron exchanged uncomfortable looks. Really upset she was when Black nearly stabbed your Ron. She's got her heart in the right place, Hermione has, and you two not talking to her. If she'd just get rid of that cat, I'd speak to her again, said Ron angrily. But she's sticking up for it. It's a maniac, and she won't hear a word against it. Well, people can be a bit stupid about their pets, said Hagrid wisely. Behind him, Buckbeak spat a few ferret bones onto Hagrid's pillow. They spent the rest of their visit discussing Gryffindor's improved chances for the Quidditch Cup. At 9 o'clock, Hagrid walked them back up to the castle. A large group of people was bunched around the bulletin board when they returned for the common room. Hogsmeade next weekend, said Ron, craning over the heads to read the new notice. What do you reckon? He said quietly to Harry, as they went to sit down. Well, Filch hasn't done anything about the passage into Honeydukes, said Harry even more quietly. Harry, said a voice in his right ear. Harry started and looked around at Hermione, who was sitting at the table right behind him, clearing space in the wall of books that had been hiding her. Harry, if you go into Hogsmeade again, I'll tell Professor McGonagall about the map, said Hermione. Can you hear someone talking, Harry? Growled Ron, not looking at Hermione. Ron, how can you let him go with you, after what Sirius Black nearly did to you? I mean it, I'll tell.
Ugh, okay, I know, whatever. Hermione's got her heart in the right place, but she's done her fucking tattletale. I just wanna fucking shoot her sometimes. Oh my god, Lucy the fuck up. You have a stake the size of like the Empire State Building shoved up your ass, lady. Ugh. Okay. That's my rant.
That's your rant. You're on to rant. So now you're trying to get Harry expelled, said Ron furiously. Haven't you done enough damage this year?
That was mean.
Hermione opened her mouth to respond. With a soft hiss, Crookshanks leapt onto her lap. Hermione took one frightened look at the expression on Ron's face, gathered up Crookshanks, and hurried away towards the girls' dormitories. So how about, said Ron to Harry, as though there had been no interruption. Come on, last time we went, you didn't even see anything. You haven't even been inside Zonko's yet. Harry looked around to check that Hermione was well out of earshot. Okay, he said, but I'm taking the invisibility cloak this time. Should we stop there?
No, we have more.
Okay.
Unless you would.
I want more. Stop. No, I'm okay. Or what?
Are things flowing?
No, shut up. So mean to me. On Saturday morning, Harry packed his invisibility cloak, which covers these two.
He does not have those.
I know, but it would. He did. And slipped in the Marauder's map into his pocket and went down to breakfast with everyone else. Hermione kept shooting suspicious looks down at the table, but he avoided her eye and was careful to let her see him walking back up the marble staircase in the entrance hall as everybody else proceeded to the front doors. Bye, Harry called to Ron. See you when you get back. Okay, he's being really smooth now, isn't he? Ron grinned and winked. Yeah. No one could see that, right? Harry hurried up to the third floor, slipping the Marauder's map out of his pocket as he went. Crouching behind the one-eyed witch, he smoothed it out.
I solemnly swear I'm up to no good.
A tiny dot was moving. He must have already said that. A tiny dot was moving in his direction. Harry squinted at it. The minuscule writing next to it read, Neville Longbottom. Harry quickly pulled out his wand, muttered Descendium, and shoved his bag into the statue. But before he could climb in himself, Neville came around the corner. Hi, Harry. I forgot you weren't going to Hogsmeade either. Hi, Neville, said Harry, moving swiftly away from the statue and pushing the map back into his pocket. What are you up to? Nothing, shrugged Neville. Want a game of Exploding Snap? Not now. I was going to the library to do that vampire essay for Lupin. I'll come with you, said Neville brightly. Man. I haven't done it either. Hang on. Yeah, I forgot. I finished it last night, Harry said. You think Neville believes him?
No. Poor Neville.
Great, you can help me, said Neville, his round face anxious. I don't understand a thing about garlic at all. They have to eat it, or... He broke off with a small gasp, looking over Harry's shoulder. It was Snape. What are you doing here? Said Snape. Oh, sorry. What are you doing here? Said Snape, coming to a halt and looking from one to the other. An odd place to meet. To Harry's immense disquiet, Snape's black eyes flickered to the doorways on one side of them and then to the one-eyed witch. We're not meeting here, said Harry. We just met here. Indeed, said Snape. You have a habit of turning up in unexpected places, Potter, and you are very rarely there for good reason. I suggest the pair of you return to Gryffindor Tower, where you belong. Harry and Neville set off without another word. As they turned the corner, Harry looked back. Snape was running one of the hands over the one-eyed witch's head, examining it closely. Harry had managed to shake Neville off at the fat lady by telling him the password, then pretending he'd left his vampire essay in the library and doubling back. Once out of sight of the security trolls, he pulled out the map again and held it close to his nose. The third-floor corridor seemed to be deserted. Harry scanned the map carefully and saw, with a leap of relief, that the tiny dot labeled Severus Snape was now back in his office. He sprinted back to the one-eyed witch, opening her hump, and heaved himself inside, and slid down to meet his bag at the bottom of the stone chute. He wiped the Marauder's map clean, and then set off at a run. Harry, completely hidden beneath the invisibility cloak, emerged into the sunlight outside Honeydukes, and prodded Ron in the back. "It's me," he muttered. "What kept you?" Ron hissed. "Snape was hanging around." They set off up the high street. "Where are you?" Ron kept muttering out of the corner of his mouth. "Are you still there? This feels weird." They went to the post office. Ron pretended to be checking the price of an owl to Bill in Egypt so that Harry could have a good look around. The owls sat hooting softly down at him, at least 300 of them, from great greys right down to little scops owls, local deliveries only, which were so small that they could have sat in the palm of Harry's hand. Aww. It'd be so cute. Mm-hmm. Do you want to get one?
Okay.
I wonder if they exist.
I bet they do.
Tiny little owls.
Yeah, they do. They're like this big.
Mm-hmm. Can you keep them as pets?
I don't know.
They probably like hunting. I want to go. Then they visited Zonko's, which was so packed with students that Harry had to exercise great care not to tread on anyone and cause a panic. I'm sure that, seems like in a crowded place there'd be no chance that Harry could make it, you know? Someone would bump into him. There were jokes and tricks to fulfill even Fred and George's wildest dreams. I think Fred and George's wildest dreams had nothing to do with jokes and tricks. What do you think?
I think that some of them honestly do. They love a good prank.
True. What else do you think they love?
I think you should keep reading.
Harry gave Ron whispered orders and passed him some gold from under the cloak. They left Zonko's with their money bags, considerably lighter than when they had been on entering, but their pockets bulging with dung bombs, hiccup sweets, frog's spawn soap, and a nose-biting teacup apiece. The day was fine and breezy, and neither of them felt like staying indoors, so they walked past the Three Broomsticks and climbed a slope to visit the Shrieking Shack. It stood a little way above the rest of the village, and even in daylight, it was slightly creepy, with its boarded windows and dank, overgrown garden. "Even the Hogwarts ghosts avoid it," said Ron, as they leaned on the fence looking up. "I asked Nearly Headless Nick, and he says he heard a very rough crowd lives here. No one can get in."
Wait, what is it?
The Shrieking Shack.
Oh, gotcha.
Fred and George tried, obviously, but all the entrances are sealed shut. Harry, feeling hot from their climb, was just considered taking off the cloak for a few minutes when they heard voices nearby. Someone was climbing toward the house from the other side of the hill. Moments later, Malfoy appeared, followed closely by Crabbe and Goyle. Malfoy was speaking. "Should have an owl from Father at any time. He had to go to the hearing to tell them about my arm, about how I couldn't use it for 3 months. Crabbe and Goyle snickered. "I really wish I could hear that great Harry Maugham trying to defend himself. There's no arm in him, honest. And that hippogriff's as good as dead." Malfoy suddenly caught sight of Ron, his pale face split into a malevolent grin. "What are you doing here, Weasley?" Malfoy looked up at the crumbling house behind Ron. "Suppose you'd like to live here, wouldn't you, Weasley? Dreaming about having your own bedroom? Or did your family all sleep in one room, is that true?" Harry had to seize the back of Ron's robes to stop Ron from leaping on Malfoy. "Leave him to me," he hissed in Ron's ear. The opportunity was too perfect to miss. Harry crept silently around Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, bent down, and scooped a large handful of mud out of the path. "We were just discussing your friend Hagrid," said Malfoy to Ron, just trying to imagine what he's saying to the committee for the disposal of dangerous creatures. "You think he'll cry when they cut off his hippogriffs?" Splat! Malfoy's head jerked around as the mud hit him. His silver blonde hair was suddenly dripping in muck. "What the..." Ron had to hold on the fence to keep himself standing. He was laughing so hard. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle suddenly spun around on the spot, staring wildly. Malfoy was trying to wipe his hair clean. "What was that? Who did that?" "Very haunted up here, isn't it?" said Ron, with the air of one commenting on the weather. "You think that they would notice Harry's footprints, right?"
"Right."
Crabbe and Goyle were looking scared. Their bulging muscles were no use against ghosts. Malfoy was staring madly around the deserted landscape. Harry sneaked up along the path, where a particularly sloppy puddle yielded some foul-smelling green sludge. Splash! Crabbe and Goyle caught some this time. Goyle huffed furiously on the spot, trying to rub it out of his small, dull eyes. "It came from over there," said Malfoy, wiping his face and staring at a spot some 6 feet to the left of Harry. Crabbe wandered forward, his long arms stretched like a zombie. Harry dodged around him, picked up a stick, and lobbed it at Crabbe's back. Harry doubled up with silent laughter as Crabbe did a kind of pirouette in person, in midair, trying to see who had thrown it. As Ron was the only person Crabbe could see, it was he Ron had started for. It was Ron he started for, but Harry stuck out his leg. Crabbe stumbled. See, this was really stupid of Harry. And his huge flat foot caught the hem of Harry's cloak. Harry felt a great tug, and the cloak slid off his face. For a split second, Malfoy stared at him. "Ah!" he yelled, pointing at Harry's head. Then he turned tail and ran, at breakneck speed, back down the hill, Crabbe and Goyle behind him. Harry tugged the cloak back up again, but the damage was done. "Harry," said Ron, stumbling forward and staring hopelessly at the point where Harry had disappeared. "You'd better run for it. If Malfoy tells anyone, you'd better get back to the castle quick." "See you later," said Harry, and without another word, he tore back down the path toward Hogsmeade. Would Malfoy believe what he had seen? Would anyone believe Malfoy? Nobody knew about the invisibility cloak. Nobody except Dumbledore. Harry's stomach turned over. Dumbledore would know exactly what had happened if Malfoy said anything.
Okay, but I'm sure that Dumbledore knows that Harry's going to Hogsmeade. Like, I'm just saying.
Right, of course. We all know that.
Right. Are you saying I'm dumb?
What?
No.
Where was they, Boo? Oh, back in Honeydukes. Back down the cellar steps. Across the stone floor. Through the trapdoor. Harry pulled off the cloak, tucked it under his arm, and ran flat out along the passage. Malfoy would get back first, but how long would it take him to find a teacher? Panting, a sharp pain in his side, Harry didn't slow down until he reached the stone slide. He would have to leave the cloak where it was. It was too much of a giveaway in case Malfoy had tipped off a teacher. He hid it in a shadowy corner and started to climb as fast as he could, his sweaty hands slipping on the slides of the chute. He reached the inside of the witch's hump, tapped it with his wand, stuck his head through, hoisted himself out. The hump closed, and just as Harry jumped out from behind the statue, he heard footsteps approaching. It was Snape. He approached Harry at a swift walk, his black robe swishing, and then stopped in front of him. "So," he said. There was a look of suppressed triumph about him. Harry tried to look innocent, all too aware of his sweaty face and his muddy hands, which he quickly hid in his pockets. "Come with me, Potter," said Snape. Harry followed him downstairs, trying to wipe his hands clean on the inside of his robes without Snape noticing. They walked down the stairs to the dungeons and then into Snape's office. Harry had been here only once before, and he had been in very serious trouble then, too. Snape had acquired a few more slimy, horrible things in jars since the last time, all standing on shelves behind his desk, glinting in the firelight, and adding to the threatening atmosphere. "Sit," said Snape. Harry sat. Snape, however, has just remained motionless. Remained standing. "Mr. Malfoy has been to see me with a very strange story, Potter," said Snape. Harry didn't say anything. "He tells me that he was up by the Shrieking Shack when he ran into Weasley, apparently alone." Still, Harry didn't speak. "Mr. Malfoy states that he was standing talking to Weasley when a large amount of mud hit him in the back of his head. How do you think that could have happened, Potter?" Harry tried to look mildly surprised. "I don't know, Professor." Snape's eyes were boring into Harry's. You're very cute. It was exactly like trying to stare down a hippogriff. Harry tried hard not to blink. "Mr. Malfoy then saw an extraordinary apparition. Can you imagine what it might have been, Potter?" "No," said Harry, trying now to sound innocently curious. "It was your head, Potter, floating in mid-air." There was a long silence. "Maybe he'd better go to Madame Pomfrey," said Harry, "if he's seeing things like..." "What would your head have been doing in Hogsmeade, Potter?" said Snape softly. "Your head is not allowed in Hogsmeade. No part of your body has permission to be in Hogsmeade." "I know that," said Harry, striving to keep his face free of guilt or fear. "It sounds like Malfoy's having hallucinations." "Malfoy is not having hallucinations," snarled Snape, and bent down a hand on each arm of Harry's chair so that their faces were a foot apart. "If your head was in Hogsmeade, so was the rest of you." "I've been up in Gryffindor Tower," said Harry, "like you told." "Can anyone confirm that?" Harry didn't say anything. Snape's thin mouth curled in a horrible smile. "So," he said, straightening up again, "everyone from the Minister of Magic downward has been trying to keep the famous Harry Potter safe from Sirius Black. But the famous Harry Potter is a law unto himself. What the ordinary people worry about is safety. The famous Harry Potter goes where he wants, with no thought for the consequences." Harry stayed silent. Snape was trying to provoke him into telling the truth. He wasn't going to do it. Snape had no proof, yet. "How extraordinarily like your father you are, Potter," said Snape suddenly, his eyes glinting. He too was exceedingly arrogant. Small amount of talent on the Quidditch field made him think he was a cut above the rest of us, too. Strutting around the place with his friends and admirers, the resemblance between you is uncanny. "My dad didn't strut," said Harry, and before he could stop himself, "and neither do I." "Your father didn't set much store by rules either," Snape went on, pressing his advantage, his face full of malice. "Rules were for lesser mortals. Quidditch Cup winners. His head was so swollen." "Shut up!" Harry was suddenly on his feet. Rage, such as he had not felt since his last night in Privet Drive, was coursing through him. He didn't care that Snape's face had gone rigid, his black eyes flashing dangerously. "What did you say to me, Potter?"
"I told you to shut up about my dad," Harry yelled. "I know the truth, all right. He saved your life. Dumbledore told me. You wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for my dad."
Snape's shallow skin had the color of sour milk. "And did the headmaster tell you the circumstances under which your father saved my life?" he whispered. "Or did he consider the details too unpleasant for precious Potter's delicate ears?" Harry bit his lip. He didn't know what had happened and didn't want to admit him, but Snape seemed to have guessed the truth. I would hate for you to run away with a false idea of your father, Potter, he said, a terrible grin twisting his face. Have you imagined some kind of glorious heroism? Then let me correct you. Your saintly father and his friends played a highly amusing joke on me that would have resulted in my death if your father hadn't gotten cold feet at the last minute. There was nothing brave about what he had done. He was saving his own skin as much as mine. Had their joke succeeded, he would have been expelled from Hogwarts. Snape's uneven, yellowish teeth were bared. Turn out your pockets, Potter, he spat suddenly. Turn out your pockets, or we shall go straight to the headmaster. Pull them out, Potter. Cold with dread, Harry slowly pulled out the bag of Zonko's treats and the Marauder's map. He should have thrown the treats down.
I know, he's such an idiot. I'm getting hungry.
Okay, me too. Snape picked up Zonko's bag. Should we finish? Or should we finish? Hang on. Oh, there's quite a bit of... Here. Snape pulled up the Zonko's bag. Ron gave them to me, said Harry, praying he'd get a chance to tip Ron off before Snape saw him. He brought them back from Hogsmeade last time. Indeed. And you've been carrying them around ever since. How very touching. And what is this? Snape picked up the map. Harry tried with all his might to keep his face impassive. Spare bit of parchment, he said with a shrug. Snape turned it over, his eyes on Harry. Surely you don't need such a very old piece of parchment, he said. Why don't I just throw this away? His hand moved towards the fire. No, said Harry quickly. So, said Snape, his long nostrils quivering, is this another treasured gift from Mr. Weasley? Or is it something else? A letter, perhaps, written in invisible ink? Or instructions to get into Hogsmeade without passing the Dementors? Harry blinked, and Snape's eyes gleamed. Maybe we should stop here?
Okay.
Because there's quite a bit of...
Yeah, that sounds good.
Alright, next time we shall see what Snape does to figure out that map. You are a very sexy girl. I love you so much, bro. And for listening to this later, sleep well. Good night.